Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of Why Would You Tell Me That? My name is Neil Delamere and my co-host is Dave Moore. And basically, if you haven't heard the previous podcast, one of us comes armed with facts, explains some interesting things to the other one, and then brings an expert in the second half to back up their more wild claims. Now, this week, it's Dave's turn. Dave?
Yeah, hi. It is a wild claim that I'm bringing you this week. I am going to tell you why. The movie Napoleon Dynamite.
Napoleon, give me some of your tots.
No, go find your own.
Come on, give me some of your tots.
No, I'm freaking starved. I didn't get to eat anything today. Oh, God. Gross. Freaking idiot.
Yes?
Remember that?
I do.
The movie Napoleon Dynamite broke Netflix.
Not in a financial sense, just broke the computer.
It made Netflix offer $1 million to somebody who could fix the problem it caused.
Oh, no way.
Like, right, not somebody, anybody, you, me, whoever. It caused a problem and Netflix went, whoa, we need to offer people $1 million, anyone who can solve this. And we're going to do a deep dive on why this movie is actually so important for the world we live in today when it came out so many years ago. And we had no idea at the time it was going to push us in the direction we're going to go in.
Can I ask one kind of brief question?
You're not really allowed in part one, but go on.
Okay. Well, give me a limited answer.
Right.
Is it kind of a techie thing? That's all I'm asking. And the reason I'm asking that is because if there was a chance that I could have maintained my degree and earned $1 million, the second half of the show would be bittersweet.
It kind of is a little bit techie. Yeah. How good were you with maths and statistics?
I wasn't great, but I knew some people who were brilliant.
Right, well, you're probably safe then. But yeah,
okay.
In the second half, we're going to speak to a Hollywood casting agent. Her name is Ali Horn. She's absolutely brilliant. She's going to break it down for us as to why now, in this day and age, a movie that came out so long ago has had a huge effect on how we consume media, particularly Hollywood media, today. It's a great story, but we'll get to that.
Well, talking of media, if you want us to cover something, you can get in touch. We're at Why Would You Tell Me That on Instagram. We're also on Twitter as well. I'm at Neil Delamere Comedy on Instagram, and he's at Dave Today FM. I always forget, at Dave Today FM.
I don't know why.
Instagram.
It's my name and my radio station. It literally couldn't be easier.
I know, but I think that at some point they're going to fire you.
There's no doubt. There's absolutely no doubt.
That's just, I think this is part of my subconscious that goes, it can't continue this well forever. So I'm not prepared to commit to it.
Yeah, what we are definitely committed to, however, is being proudly part of the Acast Creator Network.
Yes.
And, thanks to the lads in Acast for supporting us and making this podcast happen. Okay, I want to bring you on a little bit of a journey in part one today, Neil. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you some questions along the way. I want to learn a little bit about you. Like, for example, I don't know exactly how you research your topics for Why Would You Tell Me That? All I have really is a checkered internet search history. Maybe you use class A drugs to get into the mind state that gets you, you know, thinking about these different ideas we could bring to the podcast table. I don't know how you do it. I'm not suggesting you do, but I'm saying I don't know whether you do or not.
Okay.
But I want to bring you down a little road. So we're going to talk in part one about movie set disasters. And there are many. There's famous ones like Steven Spielberg on the set of Jaws. The mechanical shark didn't work. One of the actors was a notorious drunk. He couldn't get his lines out. They missed days of filming. There's loads of those stories. And there's George Lucas and Star Wars and all that, whatever. But another Hollywood titan, all the puns intended, is James Cameron. Okay.
Right, yes.
And James Cameron is known as a tyrannical director. He likes things done his way, and he's not prepared to compromise. And if there's any back chat, it's like being back in school in the 60s. You're going to get in trouble, okay?
Okay.
So Kate Winslet has said since, even though she was in Titanic, small indie movie, you may not have heard of it. She was in this movie called Titanic, and she said she genuinely feared that she might drown in the water because when he shot The Abyss, which is another James Cameron movie, Ed Harris, who stars in that movie, he actually nearly drowned. And this is all because of the way James Cameron likes his films to be made. Like, so he wasn't accepting
near drownings.
Yeah, it's a key thing for him. But he just wasn't accepting, you know, a certain way of doing it and letting safety get in the way of getting the perfect take or whatever it was.
Okay.
And Kate Winslet said she feared for that. But look, I have a theory then, because for years we've all speculated as to why her character Rose didn't let Leo's character Jack onto the piece of wood, the door that she had.
It's clearly big enough to have the two of them.
I think she knew that absolutely Jack could fit on it, but she was saying to herself, if James Cameron's going to leave me out in the Atlantic for a while, I want all the space I can get, and I'm not risking that he might topple me over and get, I'm just not doing it. This is why Rose never let Jack on.
This isn't to do with the story. This is to do with kind of survival. And she's just looking at Cameron going,
yeah.
He would have mentioned if Jack was to be on the door. So I'm going to assume no door for Jack. He could have just held on to the door as well.
Anything. Like I suppose in the movie, I think he kind of slips into unconsciousness due to hypothermia and things. And maybe, but I mean, he was wearing braces. Couldn't she have wrapped the braces around the doorknob? There were so many options for her. Like,
actually, if he was wearing braces, he could have leaned off the front of it and she could have held on to the braces, recreating the earlier scene. He could have been like a dragon on the front of a Viking ship. There are many ways that this could have been done. Dude, all I'm saying is the world's foremost director wasn't creative enough. That's all I'm saying.
You can tell him that because he ain't going to like that criticism. I can tell you that much.
Okay.
And actually what happened, this is absolutely incredible. On one long shoot, now this wasn't a shoot with Kate and Leo, so they weren't there, but on one really, really long shoot, like weeks on end, it was the last day of that particular shoot. And the cast and crew were there, obviously like hundreds of cast and hundreds of crew, and James Cameron and Bill Paxton, who of course played, it was in the modern day part, the kind of the bit that was cutting back to the Titanic, he was in the modern day, he was there as well. And they had a kind of a lunch to say, you know, okay, that's a wrap. Everybody grab lunch and then we'll de-rig and get out of here and Cameron will get his private jet to wherever and blah, 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 whatever it was. So they went in to have lunch and lots of people had this bit of food and that bit of food. And somebody came out and said, the lobster chowder is amazing. And obviously they were shooting on the Atlantic coast, wherever it was, they were shooting this thing. And so it was a kind of it's a local delicacy. So everybody went in for the lobster chowder. It was amazing. So amazing, in fact, that people went back for seconds. And a little bit after lunch, maybe 15, 20 minutes later, people started to feel a little bit weird.
Right.
And then a lot weird.
Okay.
And then some people got sick and some people had hallucinations. And in very severe food poisoning cases, hallucinations can be a thing. Like you can get that sick and have that much of a temperature and whatever, your body reacts, you know, that can happen. Some people ended up in A&E and then some people were just hysterically laughing. And other people were hysterically crying, okay? Now, I don't know about you, but food poisoning tends to not do this. Even perhaps some dodgy lobster wouldn't really do this. So they investigated. They were like, what is happening here? There's something else going on.
Yeah.
It turns out, and as yet unnamed, and probably for his own good or her own good, unnamed chef, spiked the lobster chowder. Now, do you want to have a guess at what they spiked it with?
Well, given that you asked me at the start, do I take hallucinogenic drugs? And you said that people are hallucinating, like mushrooms or something.
No.
What?
Angel dust. PCP.
Angel dust?
Yeah. I mean, laced with angel dust, which, by the way, we should point out, dramatically improved the flavor.
So we discussed that, like, you don't like mushrooms, so no. If you had to be laced, you'd prefer PCP angel dust.
Yes, rather absolutely. Than this.
Okay, the first thing that comes to my head is we don't know who it is.
No, it still is as yet kind of an unprosecuted crime.
That is 100% 100% where the idea for Avatar came from. That is 100%. Right? Well, let's do a film about the European colonization of America, right? Like as a metaphor. Okay, James, but everybody's blue and they got weird noses. Okay, somebody write that down. Yeah, so PCP, when you say PCP, you mean Angel Dust. Like, they weren't trying to buy a car. They weren't looking for a minimum guaranteed value for the shipwreck of the Titanic.
No, this is definitely Angel Dust. And actually, James Cameron wouldn't have come up with the idea of Avatar in this particular situation because he actually rushed to his room and made himself sick when he saw everybody else. And he was one of the few people who avoided an A&E visit, which loads of them had to do. Bill Paxton was among them. And they got they genuinely got really sick. Now, look, food poisoning is one thing, but lacing food with class A drugs has, you know, effects on people that is longer than your traditional kind of 24-hour bout of gastroenteritis. Like,
it's weird. I don't know where you heard of the name Angel Dust first. And this could be a difference between our particular roots, but Angel Dust used to always, you'd hear it on the news, it used to be given to cattle. Illegally, because it was
it made them more delicious. Obviously, you know, it made them really, really, really delicious.
Made them taste like lobster chowder. Yeah, but I always thought, like, when I came across it then afterwards as PCP, you just think, how come it didn't have that effect on cows? Like, you never saw cattle.
How do we know?
Okay, you never drive by a field and you just see a cow dressed as a matador shouting at a bull, going, "Come on, Derek, you know you like it rough." They never hallucinate, dude. They do.
I'm not sure we know. I mean, think about what cows do. They're grazing animals. They stand there all day with their heads down and they just chew and chew and chew and chew. And there are 1,800 stomachs. We should probably do an episode on that because there's not just that many. But they just get to work and that's what they do. So if you think about it, maybe when a cow lifts up its head and just glances around for a while, all the other cows are going, "Oh my God, Derek's on PCP because look what he's doing." Maybe that's crazy behavior for a cow. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know. No, I disagree with you in terms of the hallucinogenic effects of if you get really bad food poisoning.
Oh, yeah.
Because what happens is you get so dehydrated or you can get a fever. I don't know. Have you ever been? I have been that sick. I went to Thailand many years ago with Greg Davis and Rod Gilbert, and we did gigs all around. I must have told you this before. We did a gig in Manila, and when we did the gig in Manila, on the front, there was a terrorist group, and they were trying to take over Moro Island, I think it's called,
right.
It's called the Moro Islamic Liberation Front. So on the front of all the newspapers was MILF plans new attack, and we were like, that's quite an interesting.
Let's not deter them immediately, you say. Yeah, to the terrorists. Let's
investigate this a bit more.
Let them in.
But I went to Thailand with the lads as well, and I have never been more sick in my entire life.
Wow.
I ate something, and to the extent that I was so dehydrated, I was on the loo, not to get too graphic, but you know when you're puking and you're it's all coming out everywhere. And
yeah.
It was one of these Japanese toilets. It was this really posh kind of toilet and a bidet and had this like voice in it. But it had been built for people who eat healthy diets, I think. Rice and fish. It had never encountered the mainly tato and rasher based diet of the average Irish male. Like, it couldn't cope with a semi-digested Yorkie hurtling towards it at the speed of sound. And I got so sick, like everything I ever ate came out. Food, drink, marbles I ate as a child, just like stickers of Ray Houghton from the 1990 World Cup, crayons, Play-Doh. And I was so sick. Did you ever get so sick that you're bargaining with your own anus? Where you're going, please, I'll give you anything. The soft toilet tissue.
I'm just worried. I'm worried that your anus may have talked back to you and told you what I wanted.
Yeah, please. I mean, I used the Andrex puppy. If you just stop, please.
The puppy itself. I'm sure your arse would love you for that.
It was so horrendous. I had this fever dream that I was talking to the toilet. Because the toilet was doing
back.
But the toilet had a setting where it was like preparing nozzles or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so sorry about this, but there's not much I could do.
I
could have been a microwave. It was horrendous. It was horrendous.
Oh,
and they brought
me
into the hospital and they gave me a drip and I was fine.
Oh, God. Well, I'm glad you're here and you've lived to tell the tale. But that pales in comparison to another movie set. Have you ever heard of a man called Noel Marshall?
It rings a bell, but no, he sounds like he sells shoes in a small Midlands town.
He does. He doesn't sound like a Hollywood director, but he is a Hollywood director. Not only is he a Hollywood director, but he's also Melanie Griffith's dad.
No way.
Yeah. And Noel Marshall made a movie called Roar. And I know you've never heard of it because it is so bad. And let me tell you about the set, which is even worse. So Noel Marshall wrote, produced, directed, and starred in a movie called Roar. He began shooting it in 1970. It's a movie about a wildlife conservationist whose family comes to visit his wildlife park. So imagine the Tiger King is having his kids and his missus over who've never visited his lair before, okay?
Okay. Lair.
And I suppose in 2022, although unlike the Tiger King, I suppose in modern day world in Hollywood, we'd shoot with CGI tigers and CGI lions.
Yeah.
This was 1970. So what they did was he went, where can I get 100, count them, live, hungry, squabbling big cats?
Yeah.
Because if you put 100 big cats in the same place, they're not going to get on very well.
No, I wouldn't imagine there would be that fraternal. You know,
and their disagreements may be slightly more zealous than, for example, 100 hamsters, you know. I'm sure it could nip. I'm sure they could be, you know, a little bit tyrannical. But this man decided he would put 100 live big cats in a gaming reserve or whatever it was, and then put a movie crew in there.
How do you train that many cats?
Yeah, you don't, because no, you didn't. They were actually just live, wild animals. Right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how this would go down in your house, Neil, but if you went home to your wife and child, your wife being Tippi Hedren, actress, and child Melanie Griffith, also soon to be actress, and said, hey guys, want to star in my movie? And they go, sure, husband, dad, sounds great. What's the movie? It's where you go into a wildlife park with 100 live tigers and lions. And they go, sure, dad, let's do that. That's who he cast in this movie.
Tippi Hedren was scared of birds.
Well,
how come she was okay with lions and tigers?
I'm not sure she was okay with this, because let me tell you what happened. He began shooting in 1970.
Yeah.
It came out in 1981. It took 11 years to make this movie. It cost $17 million, which I know today doesn't sound like much, but to put that in perspective, in today's money, that's $130 million.
And it took 11 years to come out.
Nothing. That is nothing compared to the injuries that people faced. Okay. Tippi had her throat bitten open by a lion.
Oh, God.
Melanie had a face injury that required 50 stitches. And the director of photography, and I'm shuddering even to say this sentence, had his scalp torn off by a lion requiring 200 stitches.
Surely when one of the first things happen, like nowadays, that would shut down production. Mm.
There were 70 cast and crew, and almost every single one of them was injured by a big cat during the 11 years it took to shoot this movie.
How in the name of God were they allowed to do that?
I suppose it was the 70s. I don't really know.
Do you know where people go, oh, you're just a snowflake, and you think, yeah, that's not a bad thing necessarily.
So in some circumstances, it's good that we think that maybe animal cruelty and human safety, these two things come into play. Maybe we shouldn't mess with them.
I can't begin to understand how they continue to do that, but also how I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
When the movie came out in 1981, having suffered through 11 years of hell, of torture, and finally, the man who sounds like he sells shoes, Noel Marshall, gets his movie out into cinemas, flop. Nobody watched it. And the reason why nobody watched it is because he pitched it as a family movie.
After who? The Manson family.
Well, there was like, he thought it was literally like, you know, Bigfoot and the Hendersons, you know, except instead of a guy, a big tall guy in a suit, it was actually 100 live cats.
He could sell it now. If he sold it now as Tiger King from the tiger's perspective, the untold story, Lion and Tiger's Revenge. If he did it that way, I think people would go on board.
Possibly.
Why did it flop? Is it because of that? Or would the lions not do the press? They're notoriously like... They're just all lined up on a red carpet, ripping the face off each other.
No, honestly, it was pitched as a family movie, released in the cinemas. Families left the cinema while the movie was on in tears because the kids were so afraid. And they were so afraid because the actors' portrayals were so real because they were all utterly terrified.
Yeah, hold on. There's no portrayal in if you're physically being attacked by a lion. What I want you to do is pretend you're being attacked by a lion, and we're going to get that effect by having you attacked by a lion.
Honestly, when you're finished listening to this episode, or even pause it now and go, just look up a scene from the movie Roar out in 1981.
Cats got a little excited. That's all.
Why did you bring us here? We're just
going to
die.
Roar.
And do you know what your friends are probably doing to our family right now? They are eating. Shut up.
Roar.
There are scenes where they're, Melanie Griffith and her family, they're on boats and they're just in a little river. And there are lions and tigers prowling the banks of the river. In fact, there's one scene where a boat is constantly being trying, the guy's trying to row, and a lion just keeps putting his paw into the boat and pulling it back towards him. Then he lets go, the guy rows a bit, he puts his paw back into the boat and pulls it back. And behind him, two tigers are absolutely killing each other in the water. Like, it is so insane. How they thought this was a kid's movie, I have no idea.
Okay, so that's the 1970s. Okay, I figured out. Everybody who ever saw that went, oh my God, terrific. But somewhere in South England, a young Daniel Day-Lewis saw that and went, look at their commitment. Someday, I will win Oscars by being that committed.
He probably did.
I mean, I listened to that and I think that's kind of ridiculous. Why would anybody put themselves in that position? But do you remember we had to do something for the radio station that we both used to work on for charity, Face Your Fears?
Oh, Dare to Care. Yes. Dare to care.
So one of the things I did for that is I went to a reptile park because I hate all that stuff. And I said, I'll hold the snake and I'll hold the spider, although they're not reptiles. And it wasn't that impressive. And I said to the keeper, is there anything else we can do? And he went, oh, you can feed the alligator if you want.
Whoa.
And I went, okay. Now, I kind of thought there'd be some sort of chicken wire or perspex or something. Got into the enclosure. And then there was an alligator, like a massive alligator, right, like 2 feet from me.
Just there.
And as soon as I got in, she starts going...
Oh, you don't want an animal like that making a noise.
You don't. Yeah. And I said, what's wrong with her? And he goes, zookeeper goes, it's okay. It's just, she probably doesn't like your standing on her nest. I was like, well, you could have told me that. And I probably shouldn't be wearing this Lacoste t-shirt either. And he genuinely said, it could be worse. I'm wearing Crocs. And he was, which he thought was hilarious. And he goes, don't worry. We'll call the mail over. Now, at this point, I didn't know that there was another
There was another one.
In the enclosure.
Right.
And I said, well, I can't see him. And he said, don't worry, he can see you. And I went, but yeah, but where is he? And he goes, well, see if you can spot him. I was like, I don't want to play Where's Wally with a crocodile. And he says, it's an alligator. And I was like, Pepsi Coke. That's not really the point of this point of the conversation. And there's this huge alligator. Like, he was massive.
Right.
And I said, what's to stop him from eating this? And he goes, well, he associates us with food, not as food.
As food, yeah.
I was like, yeah, but what if he doesn't know his prepositions? What if we get the one remedial alligator who's got, is it is food or as food or by food or with food? And then just rips your face off.
Or he goes, guy in the Crocs with food. New guy, don't know. Presumably he's with the guy with food. He must be the food.
He's being, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, he was trying to explain it in terms of, it's a vending machine. He goes, you're a vending machine. Like, you know.
No, you're the Mars bar in finishing.
This is what he said. Yeah, you're just giving him food, so you're not food.
Under threat.
Yeah, but if you went to a vending machine and you realized that the vending machine was made out of a Mars bar, your man was saying he could probably only eat one of us. That's what he genuinely said. I don't know if you've ever tried to feed an alligator while trying to look thinner than the zookeeper. I tried to maintain a thigh gap. By throwing like chickens at this.
Did you hear the jaw snap? I mean, was it impressive? Like,
No, it was very, very, very impressive. But they're terrifying things. I'll tell you what, I'll post a picture
of you and the alligator.
How close I was to this thing.
Now, that isn't just a picture of your Lacoste top. I mean, I hope it's a real alligator.
yeah, that's what it is. Okay, you have whetted my appetite for all things bizarre and movie related and cine related.
Well, imagine then. That anything I have told you now is going to pale in comparison to how important the movie Napoleon Dynamite is to how we consume media now. We're going to dive into this deep dive about the importance of this weird, quirky, indie movie about middle America and one of the best characters I think ever created, Napoleon Dynamite, but lots of people don't even like Napoleon. That's part of it as well. We'll get into all that with Ali Horn, a casting agent from Hollywood, all about Napoleon Dynamite in a sec on Why Would You Tell Me That?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So welcome back to part two of Why Would You Tell Me That? And we're joined now by Ali Horn from AHC Casting in Hollywood, Los Angeles. We're very excited to have you, Ali. Hi.
Hi. Speaking as a casting director, that was a horrible American accent. So already we're off to a good start.
I think I should have probably done my southern accent. That might have paid off a little better. I don't know. Could you cast me if I was in Louisiana?
No comment.
Sorry, are we actually doing a podcast here, or have I just accidentally stepped into some sort of audition that Dave, you didn't inform me about?
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are both auditioning right now, and so far, I don't know. I think it's a no for me, dog. So far, just
kidding. Well, that's on me. Neil hasn't even begun yet. This whole conversation is his audition. So let's see how we go. Ali, we're here today because we want to talk about Napoleon Dynamite, which is, look, it's one of my favorite movies. It's a movie that I think most people know of. They know the Vote for Pedro T-shirt.
Vote for Pedro.
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 You know, they may know things about it, but I don't think many people realize the importance of Napoleon Dynamite back when it came out to the way we consume media today and the effect it had particularly on a small little startup at the time called Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super interesting story. So, okay, Napoleon Dynamite was released in like 2004. Mm. And in 2009, Netflix, when they were, you know, when they were moving from like you send out and rent DVDs, get them back in the mail to the streaming platform.
I'm sorry, that's really important, I think. Sorry, I'll just interrupt really early on. But I don't think many people, certainly in Ireland, I don't think know, because Netflix was a US company and it's only become international since it was streaming. But up until that point, Netflix was, as you said, it was a mail-in DVD rental service, like a kind of a weird enough scenario.
So weird to think back that that was like, and then that was such a like, oh my God, we're so fancy now, because you used to go to the, you know, Blockbuster video type stores. But yeah, you would essentially, you'd like, I think it was like a list. And I want to say that it was even like we were doing this on pen and paper. Like you're just like checking off what you wanted and you'd send it in and then you'd get these DVDs in the mail and you couldn't make another order until you sent back the DVDs. So they really had you there. But yeah, that was how everybody, we thought it was so much more convenient than going to the video store. Literally.
Okay. So that Netflix in 2009 was migrating to some kind of an online scenario. And so why was Napoleon Dynamite important at that point?
So it was important to Netflix because what Netflix really started and pioneered was an algorithm that would help decide, like, if you liked this, then you would like this. And so they were really at the forefront of creating that, but there were some problems in their system. So they actually made a contest where they were like, we will give, it could be amateurs, it could be a team of people, we'll give you $1 million if you can improve our algorithm by 10%.
10% improvement.
And nerd off. Just a total, like, if you can figure this out, we'll give you $1 million.
Neil is getting very excited about this. He has a computer science degree. He could have improved that algorithm.
So have I got this right in that you like a Kirk Douglas film, they give you a Burt Lancaster film. It's like an old school, maybe a Western. You like this Western, you like that Western. But does Napoleon Dynamite break this because it's unlike other films?
Yes, it broke it because no one could figure out why people loved Napoleon Dynamite or why people hated it. Like, there was no rhyme or reason. Looking back, it does kind of make sense because it was sort of a different film. It's a genre you can't really, like, it's sort of a romantic comedy. It is a hero story. Like, but whether you loved it or hated it, and this is what was happening, people were either giving it, like, no stars or half a star or like 10 stars or they loved it. But there was no, like, if you were an action adventure person, you might have loved it or you might have hated it. So the algorithm, it like basically broke these algorithms because Napoleon Dynamite proved that we're all human beings.
Yeah. And I suppose if you think about now and the way we consume media now, not just Netflix, but everything is based on an algorithm. So, you know, the ads you see at the start of a YouTube video are based on the ads that you've liked before or the things that it's heard you say or the things that you've searched for or whatever. Same thing on YouTube in terms of how the YouTubers, the actual content creators, they need to feed into the algorithm to get their videos on your, because everyone's homepage is different on YouTube. Everyone's homepage is different on Instagram. Everyone's homepage is different on TikTok. And to serve you the right content, the creators need to feed into that algorithm. So it has become probably the most important tool in modern day media consumption. But at the time, this was the beginning of it. And Napoleon Dynamite broke it out the gate.
And one of the interesting things, too, of why this was the first time that they realized that there is a flaw in these algorithms is because one of the most important pieces of data that they were looking at was like, if you liked Die Hard 1 and then you watch Die Hard 2, it would maybe stand to reason that you'd want Die Hard 3. But then they realized like, well, what if Die Hard 3 was crap? And then it's not a good movie. So that's when the rating system became a really big part of being built into this algorithm. And that's where Napoleon Dynamite, it screwed everything up. Because okay, they realized that how much you liked a film is actually more indicative of what you're going to watch again than just that you saw the other thing before. So that's what they were trying to build this new model on.
But even if you look at Netflix now, you can see how much more specific the categorizations of films are. So it used to say crime, and then it used to say British films. And now it's like crime, serial killers where he used a hammer, and films with chickens in the cast, and books based on serials with big fonts.
Wow, it's, Neil's Netflix choices are really weird.
That's all Amazon Prime.
Something that it's like, you got to be careful who looks at your Netflix thing, because somebody could come on my house and they're like, wait a minute, cults and baking shows? What the fuck is wrong with you? Oh,
sorry. No, you're 100% loud curse at this.
Like, if I think back to that movie, in case anyone's listening has never even seen it or heard of it, doesn't know, like, very, and Neil puts his hand up. I mean, well, very simply, you've got to watch Napoleon Dynamite.
No, I mean, I'm assuming that it's a small Frenchman who takes over mainland Europe using newly discovered TNT.
Actually, that might be an interesting concept for a movie. We should pitch that to Ali at this podcast. Okay.
Just not with us in it, obviously.
Well, no, obviously not. We can be the producers, but we're definitely not going to be in this one. No, but Napoleon Dynamite is a story about a high school kid in middle America. I'm going to say Idaho, but I could be wrong with that. My states aren't great, but I think it's Idaho. But basically, it's rural middle America. And this kid is going through the things that kids go through in high school. He wants to find love. He has a best friend called Pedro. And pretty much, you know, nobody likes him. He's just a bit of a weird dude. And the movie is just, it's stylistically, it looks like, if I can say this, inverted commas, a weird movie. But the story is completely classic hero story. Like, it's actually, it's very similar to movies like Rocky, like where there's a character who goes on a journey and in the end has his triumphant moment and, you know, beats Apollo Creed. And for Napoleon's case, it does a crazy dance and gets the girl and everything works out. But like, but it looked weird. And I think, Ali, that might be the reason why so many people either gave it 5 stars or no stars, was because it was a classic movie story wrapped in a weird aesthetic, as opposed to a weird movie and a weird aesthetic, which I think people would either, you know, they would know what they liked about that. And the, Netflix would go, oh yeah, sure, you like Wes Anderson movies, you like the other Wes Anderson movies. Whereas I think in this situation, they went, this is like straight up Hollywood hero story, except it looks like a really weird indie movie. And that's one of the reasons I love it.
Yes. And I would say that the other thing that it does really speak to, at least did to me, the time period and the specificity with the Midwest in the 80s, there are certain things that you see, like the 8-tracks, the moon boots that he's wearing. There are such tiny little art-directed things that this is where, too, I think that if you grew up in most of America and went to high school at a very specific time, you could be a very different person and watch, you know, now, like your real life in New York or Los Angeles or whatever,
yeah,
and then watch it and you're like, oh my God, I totally used to doodle that exact thing on my, you know, drugstore cardboard covered paper notebook. Like, there's so many things that are so specific, and you just fall in love with it because it brings you right back to that time.
Do you think there's any advantage in somebody deliberately now making a film that would defy conventions and defy genres?
I think everybody's trying to do that. I mean, listen, I live in Hollywood, and all people can come up with is like, let's make the second one. Let's do the whatever. Like, you know, everyone's trying to find a new idea. But what I think is interesting about this, when you really do a deep dive in analyzing it, is it's like Dave was saying, it's really just taking a very classic formula of a hero's journey mixed with a little bit of a romance and putting it into this weirdly specific moment in time and place on Earth. And it makes it a completely different movie, even though, to your point, Dave, if you took the plot points from Rocky and Napoleon Dynamite, I bet you page per page, they're about the same.
Wow. That was a good guess by me. So, yeah.
The Mandalorian is a Western, but it's in space.
It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Napoleon Dynamite feels like a series of bits that you can remember and piece together. Like, even though, as you said, 2004 came out, like, I can still remember him walking over to the fence where there's a llama. Again, we're going to describe something. Neil's going to be like, what is this movie?
No, I've seen the clips. I'm familiar with the film.
Yeah, so he walks over to feed his pet llama. Her name is Tina. And he throws it and he goes,
Tina, come get some ham.
Tina, come get some ham is in my vocabulary all of the time. Like, there's so many quotes from it. It worked on so many levels. But like you said, Ali, it's just, it was wrapped in a different bow.
Did anybody win the prize?
Yes. It was a team did win the prize, but then they had the contest again the following year and then had to disband it because of privacy issues, which again, Netflix was smart. Like, maybe we shouldn't go too deep into figuring out getting into people's heads and then putting that on our platform.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, because obviously most of the rest of the big tech companies have felt exactly the opposite and gone, hey, let's go in and predict everything you're going to do.
A competition does seem to be a way that you can get people to work for you for almost free. Do you know what I mean? So you go, it's $1 million if you can improve this by 10%, and people send you stuff in and they've improved it by 9%. You go, ha ha, sucker, 9%, you get nothing.
I wonder, Ali, working in Hollywood like you do, I mean, like, Napoleon Dynamite, because of the era that we lived in then, it was already a low-budget indie movie. It didn't have the backing of a huge studio, and it became a cult classic. And I suppose a lot of movies do that. But Neil asked an interesting question there, but I wonder in another way, like, is there any chance we'll ever get another Napoleon Dynamite? In the sense that if you think about it, movie companies now just go, okay, if this movie doesn't have Ryan Reynolds or The Rock, or it isn't in the Marvel Universe, we're not going to put money into it. You know, is there a chance that another movie like this will be made where, sure, it might be look a bit weird, but it's a classic story that people love to consume?
I think the answer to that is always yes, because you just never know. And somebody, you know, we have this conversation all the time in my office and with clients. It's like we become such sophisticated viewers of content. But at the end of the day, if you connect with something on a visceral level, if it makes you laugh, it makes you, that's why things go viral. It doesn't matter how lo-fi the production value is or how large the production value is. You can watch something and be like, that didn't move me at all. And they spent, you know, $300 million on it. Or some guy filmed something in his basement. That sounds weird. But you know what I mean? You might be like, that was hilarious. I get stuff like that. I get submissions from actors all the time, like kind of trying to break in or whatever. And actors are like, well, you know, is that a good way to approach a casting director? I'm like, if the content is good, then yeah. But don't send them something just because you have content, because 90% of the shit I get is shit. So, but everyone's like, and so that's where I think like people, and that's where like if you look at the cast members of SNL right now, like they're picking these people from content they've created on the internet. It's not like the audition process, because now you can find anybody anywhere. And if they're doing something interesting, people are going to want to watch it.
Did you like Napoleon Dynamite? It sounds like you loved it because of its attention to detail in the Midwest specifically, but did you like it?
When I saw it, I was like, this is fucking weird. Like, and now I've probably seen it like 5 times, which I think is true of most cult classics. That's why they're a cult classic, because the first time you see it, you're like, what the fuck is this? Because there hasn't really been anything like it. So yeah, when I first saw it, I'm like, I don't know. Do I hate this? Do I like it? And then you watch it 5 more times.
You were the problem. You were the problem with the algorithm. Yeah. They were like, Ali Horn doesn't know what she likes. Come on, people. Give him $1 million.
Some people are doing it 5 stars. Some people are doing it 1 stars. Some people are doing 1 star the first time to see it, 2 stars the second time to see it. And Ali, we're talking to you here.
Exactly.
But I mean, there's an element of Stranger Things to this as well, isn't there? Because Stranger Things, people love the same stuff about Stranger Things. Yes, it's this supernatural horror with this great cast of kids, but a lot of the other stuff is the attention to detail of the 80s. So the people who are not familiar with that love it for one reason, but the people who are old enough to remember it love it for a different reason. So it's working on multiple levels.
Oh, for sure. And I actually, you can't fact check this because I really am making this up, but what I always thought about season one of Stranger Things is that I think it's an homage to Stephen King fans. Because if you look at even the way that font is, that font Stephen King used so many times. Yeah. And like, I bet if I had the time, which I don't because I have twins, but like, if you go back and watch that first season, there's a, I'm just positive. So I'm going to Google that because that's my theory.
I've just figured out the easier way to win $1 million is twins. Hey, did you like this film? Yeah. All right. You're probably going to like that film. Give me the money.
Don't show your kids Stranger Things or Napoleon Dynamite just yet. I'm sure they're not old enough. Napoleon Dynamite, you need to be at least 12. In fact, I have a 12-year-old. I might show it to him soon, actually, because he already hears the quotes all the time. He usually comes in and asks me questions like, hey, Dad, what are you doing? I go, I'm chatting to babes online all day. And he just looks at me and goes, you're so weird. So at least he'll have context for him eventually that his dad isn't just as weird.
That's a point. Like every character in that film is so odd and you can't spend too much time with any of them, but you could almost make a film on any of the characters. The guy yes. who runs the dojo, the, you know, Kip and his crazy relationship, like with the online woman. Like it's just... It's
or the guy who runs the chicken farm, like with no teeth, and he eats like eggs and drinks raw. Like
over there, that creek, man, I found a couple of soaps on the arrowhead.
There's so many characters. Neil, you've got to watch this.
You have convinced me, but I wonder what I will rate it, Dave. That is the key question.
We should have a contest guessing what Neil is going to rate it as.
That's a good idea, Ali.
I think we should have a bet because I control the outcome of that.
I'm going to bet $1 million. No.
Yes.
I think Neil is not going to like it. I'm going to go with he's going to give it 2 stars. He'd appreciate, because he knows it's a cult classic, he'll appreciate its kind of cult classic-ness, but I don't think he's going to like it.
Are we talking about 5 stars? Like how many stars is he allowed to give it?
Yeah, let's go zero, like 1 to 5.
As a basic rule, I tend to hate everything that Dave likes. I mean, as a rule, for nearly everything in life. So frankly, it's a surprise that you've been such a nice person on this podcast, because his taste up to now has been frankly awful. So yeah, We don't know. I'll watch it and I will report back.
This is where this algorithm breaks down. So now you might not be able to judge your life by what Dave does and does not like. That might, there this might ruin it for you.
God,
maybe we need a new algorithm, Neil. Maybe we could pay people $1 million to come up with a better algorithm for us.
Let me just set up the company.
Ali from Ali Horn Casting, AHC Casting in Hollywood. Thank you so much for this. It's amazing to get an insight into the movie that effectively broke Netflix's most important algorithm. Thank you so much.
This was fun.
Okay, welcome back to part three of Why Would You Tell Me That? The importance of Netflix algorithm and how it was broken by Napoleon Dynamite. Neil Delamere, having spoken to Ali, do you think this is something you're genuinely going to go and watch now on the back of this episode?
I absolutely am. And I'll tell you why. Because any film that has as many quotes as you've quoted in the last 40 minutes or 30 minutes, I'm going to go watch. Because it reminded me of Whitnail and I. You know, people who love that film quoted all the time.
Absolutely.
So you've sold it to me, but also because I want to see how your mind works, because we've done a lot of these episodes now and I feel like I need to manipulate you more, and for that to happen I need to see the inner workings of Dave's mind. To be honest with you, at the moment it's just a monkey cycling around like Homer Simpson in very posh sneakers playing a guitar and every so often just drifting a BMW across a Mandela track. That's what it is at the moment.
These are all the things Neil thinks about me, which are so, I'm so cultured. Let me give you one more quote from it, okay?
Okay.
Napoleon's uncle is showing him and his brother a video of Napoleon's uncle throwing American footballs past a camera because, in his quote, he could have gone state. He could have played state. This was his big thing. His regret as an adult was he'd never played state. And Napoleon says, "This is the worst video ever made." And his brother Kip turns to him and goes,
"Napoleon, like anyone can even know that."
My wife will make some claim or in an argument and I'll just look at her and go, "Like anyone can even know that, Tracy." And she absolutely hates me for it.
Yeah, I can see how that would be unbelievably infuriating in a fight. Okay, if you ever do that to me, it's the end of this relationship, this podcast relationship.
Well, actually, you'll bring me some fact in the next episode and you'll go, "What do you think of that, Dave?" And I'll go, "Like anyone could even know that, Neil."
I'll have lined up some eminent scientist who has actually proved what he has claimed, and you'll hit him with that. And then nobody from the British Medical Journal will ever take our phone call again. We'll have to just ask random people shouting stuff in the street for their scientific credentials.
Is that how you get your guests? That's how I get all my guests.
Yeah, that is. I hang around the major educational and academic institutions in Ireland and abroad and see if I can find the weirdest looking fucker with the longest scarf. Oh, that fella has a scarf that's about 25 feet long. I'm sure he's stable. That'll be fine. Oh, you want to tell me about the time you met a mermaid? Come on board my podcast special.
Well, look, I think what I've hopefully proved to you and to everybody is that movies like Napoleon Dynamite are important. They're important because they do things like break algorithms of big tech and they make them think about things and improve things. And let's face it, some people kind of reject this thing. They get freaked out when, you know, their tire bursts and they talk to their friend in the pub about their burst tire. They go home and turn on Facebook and they get served tire ads. I'm the opposite. I think the algorithms have gotten better. They're more specific. And I like that. I'm not too concerned about it. My privacy is irrelevant as far as I'm concerned. I don't do anything that exciting that, like, I care which tech company knows what brand of cola I like or whatever. I'm just like, fine, serve me the things I want. And Napoleon Dynamite, by breaking Netflix's algorithm back in 2009, it's gotten us better algorithms for things like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus and all those things. And I like that.
Does it make you wonder how our podcast is served by the algorithm?
Oh,
do you think there's people at home going, "You liked other big cat mauling stories"? You liked other child actresses mauled by jungle cats. You like this podcast.
You like seafood chowder laced with angel dust. Then you'll definitely like this product from Amazon.
Okay, I better come up with something brilliant for next week then.
Yeah, okay, thankfully we're not in charge of any algorithms because they would not be good pieces of tech, even with Neil's computer science degree. But yes, that is Why Would You Tell Me That. You can follow us on Instagram. We are at Why Would You Tell Me That. Neil is at Neil Delamere Comedy. I'm at Dave Today FM. You can suggest any topics to us you think we should cover. And of course, wherever you're listening to this, if you could follow and subscribe or whatever the language is, the button, the plus button, the add button, the thumbs up button, whatever it is, hit all that and you'll be the first to know about the next amazing episode that Neil Delamere will bring us next time. Neil, what are you going to tell us about?
I am going to talk to an expert on the elements and he's going to explain to us why there's a radioactive beach not a million miles from where we are right now.
Right. I can't wait for that. It sounds utterly terrifying and quite Simpsons-esque.
You've gone out to turn off all the lights in your house to see if you can spot a glimpse of something glowing in the distance. But all will be revealed next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.